The show is live and local. It's your connection to local music and more. We've got some theater on the show today. Musical theater from the Little Theater on the Square in Sullivan, Illinois. Their show called Pete and Keeley. We'll have the named stars joining us on the show today. And first, we have a conversation with a professor at Hope College in Michigan, whose name is Mihai Craioveanu. He is a violinist and will be one of the guests on a benefit concert this Saturday for the Illinois Chamber Music Festival at Illinois Wesleyan University in Bloomington. It's an all Robert Schumann program. Was a portion of the Arabesque of Robert Schumann, played here by Stanislav Bunin. My guest on this portion of Live and Local is Mihai Craioveanu. He is a professor of violin and chair of the strings area at the Music Department of Hope College in Holland, Michigan. And the reason we're talking to him on the show today is he is going to be one of the guest performers on a concert this Saturday at 3 o'clock at First Christian Church in Bloomington of chamber music by Robert Schumann and one piece for solo piano on the occasion this year, actually, of the 200th anniversary of Schumann's birth. And he's going to be participating with pianist Mark Clinton and two members of the Illinois Wesleyan University faculty, Lisa Nelson on viola, Nina Gordon on cello. It's the Illinois Chamber Music Festival's Fall Benefit Concert. And thanks very much for joining us on the show.
It's a pleasure.
You actually played this summer, didn't you, with the same group of people?
Yes, actually, we perform, this is my fourth year as a faculty and performing artist at the Illinois Chamber Music Festival that takes place on the campus of the Illinois Wesleyan University in Bloomington. And we perform quite a few works, of chamber works. There are several concerts, both students and faculty. And so I have the pleasure of collaborating as well as performing in different groups with Nina, Lisa, and Mark. And we kind of became very good friends as well. And we respect each other and we admire each other quite a bit, not only as musicians, but also as people. And so we have a great time when we get together and make music.
And how long have you been on the summer faculty there?
This past summer was my year number four.
And how did you get connected with Illinois Wesleyan?
Well, actually, I'm glad you mentioned this because Lisa Nelson was a former student of mine, well, from my days in Illinois, and she, she was a high schooler at the time, and she took violin lessons from me, and then so eventually when she became the executive director of the festival and they needed another violin on the faculty, and so she contacted me and we reconnected, and that's the rest is history.
When were you in Illinois?
I was in Illinois in the late 80s and then the early 90s.
And you were teaching?
I was teaching at Bradley University.
Oh, in Peoria.
Yes, and then I did a little bit of guest teaching as well at Illinois State.
Well, tell us a little bit about your background. You're actually born in Romania, and how did you get where you are?
Well, I was born in Romania, and I'm native of that country, and more specifically, I was actually in the province of Transylvania. And as Romania is made up of three major former kingdoms, of Valachia, Moldavia, and Transylvania. So, and did my music education there, and eventually ended up in London, England, doing my postgraduate study, and came to the United States, and got some teaching and performing opportunities and offers, and that's how I end up in the States.
I had a girlfriend years ago who had gone to Hope College in Holland. It's a lovely place.
Very nice place. Yeah, the Holland is right on Lake Michigan. We are almost direct line from Milwaukee. So across from Milwaukee, Chicago, and it used to be a ferry going from Holland to downtown Chicago up until mid-70s that was discontinued. So maybe during those days, the Michigan waters were calmer, I guess.
I was going to say maybe less polluted, but the boats shouldn't necessarily care about that.
Yes.
Yeah. Tell me about the music department at Hope. Is it Hope's a pretty small place in the first place, isn't it?
Yeah, well, actually, it's a small liberal arts college, but actually by the way the liberal arts college size is, it's one of the biggest in the country. We have over 3,000 students.
Oh, I didn't even realize it was quite that big.
Yeah, and we're a nationally ranked college, and music department, it's quite good. It's listed in the top 40 music schools in the country by the College Finder. So that includes all the big universities as well and conservatories. So we're pretty proud of the program. Does some unique things, and it's a lovely town, kind of founded by Dutch immigrants in the early 1800s, and college actually is from 1860s. So. We have a Tulip Time Festival in May, lots of tourists, and the beaches of western Michigan are nationally famous.
And a nice place to be with a family.
It's a great town for raising a family, yeah.
Tell me a little bit about your the approach that you were raised in as a violinist, and then whether you got something different when you went to London to study, and then how you bring all of that into your own teaching now at Hope.
East European string school has a fairly long standing tradition, and it's fairly well known and competitive. So my education was pretty strong when I left Romania. It was I went to London to work with a particular well known professor, Ephraim Niemann, which is a former pupil of Carl Fesch, and so. I just did more repertoire and specializing in certain areas. So I had the great fortune of having excellent school of violin playing from the very beginning. Also, the education system at the time was set up that was able to attend a conservatory-like school from first grade. It was kind of like what Interlaken would be here. School of the Arts, and so the competition is very high, the level is very high, so as always constantly inspired and stimulated to work very hard and achieve a high standard. And then of course I traveled a lot to many festivals and summer festivals and master classes, from Paris to Weimar, Germany, to Brussels, Belgium, and then eventually London, England, where I spent a couple of years there on a British government scholarship. And it was a phenomenal town to be exposed to so much music. I think London is just the capital of classical music. There's so much going on. It's the only city in the world that has five world-class resident orchestras there.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, we're looking at London Philharmonic, London Symphony, Royal Philharmonic, BBC, and English Chamber Orchestra, to name a few. Yeah. And then there's a lot of, you know, lower-level orchestras, but not 50 of them.
In the region.
Yeah, I mean, every night there's at least 10, 15 concerts going on to pick from, not to mention opera and chamber music and other things. So, yeah, it's a phenomenal opportunity to live in and be immersed and exposed to so much music, guest orchestras coming in, guest performers. It's fantastic. It helped me grow as a musician a lot. And
I've heard that that some Eastern European string teaching in particular can be extremely rigorous. Not to say, I don't want to use the term cruel, but I've heard sometimes that some teachers can be, you know, pretty hard on their students.
Well, there was more of the old school of teaching, and it's changed in the last decade or so. It's kind of adapted itself a little bit. Yeah, it's still more demanding, but it used to be the old-fashioned teaching was very, very demanding and very drastic. And
is that what you were brought up with?
I would say my teachers were demanding, but not cruel by any means. In fact, I have the pleasure of being friends and keep in touch with my former teachers, so the ones who are still living. And so I had a great respect for them. But yes, up to a certain extent, we were brought up with that's kind of a demanding teaching and high expectations, and but also a lot of respect for the teachers as well. So it's a kind of, I tell my students sometimes that, especially the ones that like to be cuddled a lot and complimented a lot, that I said, if you would have gone through some of the teaching I went through, you probably would not have made it with that kind of attitude. So, but I mean, those are different times, different days. And so I think a combination of something of that nature and this idea of dialogue between pupil and teacher, it would be ideal. But that never really prevented me or any other students from asking the teachers, or in fact, some of them took the role of a father or grandfather. So a lot of times they were invited to their home and share a meal with you or something like that, or give you gifts in terms of giving you a music book signed by them or some music that they had, and then they're going to pass it on to you as a gift. So it was always that personal relationship that eventually became very strong.
And I'm guessing that you're of the more supportive variety of teacher.
Yes. Well, they were supportive too. I mean, they were very supportive. They were very involved in those days and the students' lives. Mm. And in fact, they kept very close contact with the students' parents as well. So in that respect, he was still very personal. But I am demanding, but also encouraging at the same time. And I tell my students, I teach by reasoning, and so and by a lot of logic and objective explanations. So I don't impose my ideas, or rather explain something that's already there and needs to be done because it is that way, not because it is my idea. Mm. And so, and I think that's the way education should be done. It should not be a personal opinion of the teacher, which usually forgets that he has the bully pulpit there. But it should be done by objective teaching and helping the student become self-reliant.
We're talking with Mihai Craioveanu on Live and Local on FM 90.9. He's going to be participating in a benefit concert for the Illinois Chamber Music Festival this Saturday evening at Illinois Wesleyan University in Normal in Presser Hall. And among the pieces on the program is the Piano Trio No. 1 of Robert Schumann on this All Schumann program. Here's the second movement from that work in this performance played by the Floristan Trio. That is some of the second movement of the Piano Trio No. 1 of Robert Schumann, played here by the Floristan Trio. You can hear the complete work played on Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock at First Christian Church in Bloomington. I misidentified the location for the performance earlier. First Christian Church in Bloomington by pianist Mark Clinton, violinist Mihai Craioveanu, and cellist Nina Gordon on an all-Schumann recital to benefit the Illinois Chamber Music Festival. And my guest this portion of Live and Local is violinist Mihai Craioveanu.
I kind of came up with this program because we're doing this concert actually next week, October 28th, here in Holland at Hope College, and the same program, and then we'll go to perform in Bloomington on 2 days later on Saturday. And I we did the together, four of us, we did the final piece in the program, which is the piano quartet, which I think is, in my opinion, is the greatest chamber music work that Schumann wrote. It's a phenomenal, complex work, very powerful, very profound, very well written. Each movement has a lot to say, highly polyphonic, and with fugal treatments, and especially in the two movements, the slow movement and the final movement. And has its own charm, phenomenal choice of melodic lines. And I think Schumann is at his best in this work. Mark and I, we did the piano trio, which is going to be the third piece in the program, the first piano trio, and with another cellist, but this time Nina will join us. And
yeah, that's not a piece I know at all.
It's an early work, and it's not often played, but it's lovely. It's fairly long. It's fairly massive. When I first heard it with the Beaux-Arts Trio, I just fell in love with it. The slow movement is very, very profound and very meditative. Again, the choices of melodic lines, especially the harmony that Schumann had at that particular time in his life, it was amazing given the age of the early age of that work. And then we have Mark and I will be playing a movement called Intermezzo from the sonata known as FAE Sonata, which was written by three friends of musicians, composers, friends of Joseph Joachim, a famous German violinist for whom Brahms wrote his violin concerto. And Dietrich Schumann and Brahms wrote a movement. In fact, Schumann wrote two, and composed the sonata, four movement sonata, and dedicated to Joseph Joachim. And it's a composite sonata, and I'm playing the intermezzo, which is written by Schumann. Brahms wrote the third movement. Dietrich wrote, which became eventually the Sonatensatz, the famous scherzo. And then Dietrich wrote the first movement, and Schumann wrote the second intermezzo, which I'm playing with Mark, and then the finale. And I asked Mark to do a piece called Arabesque by Schumann for a solo piano, because we kind of figured that would be a solo, duo, trio, and a quartet. We're going to go in a crescendo style towards the end of the program.
Oh, well done. Yeah.
So, and that kind of would be the first half of the program would be the arabesque, then the intermezzo from the FAE Sonata, and then the piano trio, and then the second part of the program after intermission would be the piano quartet.
What particular challenges does Schumann offer the violinist?
It's really the intricate melodic lines. Schumann has he was not a violinist, and at times he has very interesting and more of a not complicated. It's a more unorthodox way of writing for violin, and so there's a bit of a challenge to bring out his musical ideas and his violinistic or very interesting violinistic writing. I think he learned a lot from Brahms and a little bit maybe from Joachim in terms of writing for violin. So I think his writing for violin has improved quite a bit. And so the piano trio and the quartet are actually quite violinistic, and so is the first violin sonata that he wrote, which is very beautiful. The only problem became when he wrote the violin concerto, which was not a happy time during his life. It was just prior to him being checked into an asylum, and so it was a crisis in his life. And that's a concerto which started very well and ends up in a very chaotic combination of musical ideas that they're very, very contrasting and very conflicting, and in a way it probably reflects the Schumann's state of mind at that time in his life.
Yeah, that's not a piece that gets played very often, but the few times I've heard it, I've really quite enjoyed it.
Not at all. It's very rarely played, and it's probably not because it's not so violinistic, but because it's rather after the first movement, which kind of it's modeled a little bit after the Brahms concerto for violin, and then it becomes a very, very hard to understand and chaotic structure and melodic lines. And so I think it's been recorded a few times for maybe archival purposes or something, but yeah, unfortunately we were... He decided to write for violin, a violin concerto, a not a happy time in his life. It's certainly not the caliber of the cello concerto, certainly not the caliber of the piano concerto, which is a true masterpiece.
Yeah, I just heard that on our station, I think, yesterday or the day before.
Yeah, but we're fortunate to have a couple of violin sonatas, and of course the chamber music, especially the ones we're playing in... and the upcoming concert are just wonderful works. And Schumann was a composer, was a genius composer, no question about it. He has unbelievable ability to write good music when he was able to do so. So the genius of the great master was there.
Yeah, and it's going to be represented very well on this concert on Saturday. You know, I did a Google search on you a little bit in addition to just finding your regular biography off of the Hope College website. And given that this concert takes place the day before Halloween, I have to bring something up, and I hope you'll forgive me. But I read that you grew up not far from the famous castle of the man who kind of got to be called Dracula.
This particular castle known as Bran Castle. It's a castle which it's outside my hometown. It's a great tourist attraction, and it was famous because Bram Stoker used that castle as in his novel called Dracula, and that then became synonymous with the Dracula. The Dracula, the vampire, was a fictitious character, but there is a real Vlad Dracula, the king of Valachia, the southern province of Romania, the southern kingdom that Romania became part of Romania. And it is said that Vlad Dracula eventually slept a couple of nights there on his way to Sighișoara, where he's the famous castle and fortress where Vlad Dracula, or Dracul, which means the devil, was born in Sighișoara, which is north of my town. It's the only inhabited fortress, medieval fortress, left in the world, and it's actually a UNESCO site right now. Mm. Prince Charles of England, who has travels there almost 2-3 times a year, has some property nearby, actually was instrumental in bringing that to the to do recognition. So that's another big tourist attraction. Vlad Dracula was a real character. Was a bloodthirsty king, but mostly to defend his own country as the Ottomans were crossing the Danube River, which makes the southern border of Romania, and trying to get into the Central Europe. And he would always defend his land. So with a much smaller army, then he would, whatever prisoners of wars would take, he would impale them, and at the border. So when the next Ottoman wave of armies would come to threaten his own land, then he would get scared of what will happen to them if they get caught. So maybe he will have second thought about starting another war.
I sure would.
Yeah.
Have second thoughts about getting anywhere near him.
Yes, maybe the vampire idea probably was generated from this idea of a bloodthirsty king called Vlad Dracula, or also known as Vlad the Impaler.
How did you? I mean, I understand you didn't really know about Transylvania's fame as a vampire kingdom until you started teaching music in the West.
Well, yeah, it was basically when I went to England, I started to hear about. We never made anything about Dracula the vampire. It was never discussed or taught or even appreciated at that time. And so once the revolution started and the communist government was toppled, and obviously the country saw a commercial need for publicity, which generated more tourism. Although there's no need for that, the country is very beautiful, has many, many gorgeous sights to see. So there is no particular need for Dracula, but there was discussion about creating Disney would create a Dracula land there with a theme park and many other things. So then I became aware there's a big Dracula club in Canada, and you know. So I guess it's good for tourism and publicity.
Well, I want to ensure our listeners that it's perfectly safe to attend your recital.
Yes.
My guest today on the show, Mihai Craiovianu, the violinist who is going to be guest for the Illinois Chamber Music Festival Fall Benefit Concert on Saturday at 3 o'clock, First Christian Church in Bloomington. All works of Robert Schumann, the arabesque for solo piano with Mark Clinton, and music for violin and piano, for piano, violin, and cello, and for piano, violin, viola, and cello, and a reception with seasonal desserts will follow the concert. That's Saturday at 3 o'clock. Thanks very much for joining us, and best of luck on your travels here and on the recital.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're hearing the scherzo from the Piano Quartet in E-flat by Robert Schumann. Menachem Pressler is the pianist and members of the Emerson String Quartet here on Live and Local. And you can hear the complete Piano Quartet of Schumann on Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock, First Christian Church in Bloomington, corner of West Jefferson and Lee. It's a benefit concert for the Illinois Chamber Music Festival. And the performance for the whole recital will feature pianist Mark Clinton, violinist Mihai Craiovianu, who is my guest today on Live and Local, violist niece Lisa Nelson, and cellist Nina Gordon. I'm Kevin Kelly. Stay tuned for a conversation with Pete and Keeley.
Today is Susan Hopkins' birthday, and we're celebrating a special gift she has made. As Susan says,
WILL is a vital part of our family's lifelong learning, and even more important, of being informed citizens in a democracy.
The endowment fund Susan and her husband Lou created provides enough interest each year to pay for an entire day of broadcasting and learning on WILL Radio. And that's something to celebrate.
And today's programs are made possible not only by our listeners, but also by Sinfonia da Camera, presenting Extraordinary Voices on Saturday, November 5th at 7:30 p.m. in the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. Baritone Ricardo Herrera joins Sinfonia in celebration of the works of William Schumann. No relation to Robert Schumann. More information is available at 333-6280. Before we join Pete and Keeley, here are some other events you can go see and hear in your listening area. The Bayanihan Philippine National Dance Company is at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts in Urbana tonight at 7 o'clock. In downtown Urbana, the Parkland Jazz Combo are performing at the Iron Post. That's at 5 o'clock this evening. Desafinado is going to play in downtown Urbana tonight at 8:30 at V. Picasso's Tapas Bar. Tomorrow, the Eastern Illinois University Jazz Combos perform at Charleston's Dowden the Fine Arts Center. That's at 7:30 tomorrow night. University of Illinois faculty pianist William Hylas gives a recital tomorrow night at 7:30 at the Krannert Center in Urbana. There's a show called Attempts on Her Life at the Kirkpatrick Laboratory Theater in Bloomington. That's tomorrow night at 8 o'clock and continues later on in the week. And Gavin Stolte, or Stolt Project, not sure how to pronounce his name, play blues at the Emerald City Lounge in, my calendar doesn't say which town that's in, but if you know where the lounge is, then you know where it is. That's at 8 o'clock tomorrow night. Lots and lots of other things going on, but that's what we have time for. Let me know about your events or your group. Write to me at willcalendar@illinois.edu. That's W-I-L-L calendar@illinois.edu. Our next segment on Live and Local has, as I said, Pete and Keeley on the show. Pete Bartel and Keeley Stevens, they're actually the names of the folks in the play called Pete and Keeley, billed as America's Swingin' Sweethearts. The actor and actress, or I guess you're... Is it even PC to say actress anymore?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. My mom does.
Your mom says in reference to you?
Well, on occasion.
Chris Crouch is the male playing Pete Bartel, and Tessa White is playing Keeley Stevens. And they're in the Little Theater on the Square production, which opens Friday night. Also with us on the show today, our artistic director for the Little Theater and also the stage director for this production, Traylon Dohler. Thank you all very much for coming.
Thanks for having us.
And, you know, before we say anything about it, we should give a little hint of what some of this music sounds like, because I'll bet folks will find some of it familiar, starting with this tune from Pete and Keeley.
So you've mapped the road to romance on a chart. Got a lot, give it a shot, ready or not. Boy, oh boy, have you got a lot to learn.
And that's music from a show that has been described as pure a pleasure as a candied apple after a ride on the Tilt-A-Whirl, according to Ricky Spears on theatermedia.com.
That's awesome.
Yeah. That's what websites are good for. They give you all the clips like that. Pete and Keeley is going to open on Friday at the Little Theater on the Square in Sullivan. Chris Crouch and Tessa White are in the show. They're the title characters. And Traylon Dohler is with us as the director for the show. Traylon, why don't you give us an introduction to Pete and Keeley? It's not a show I'd ever heard of, actually.
It was an off-Broadway show that opened in 99 and became kind of a cult hit. People were running down and seeing it. At one point, Charo actually went in as Keeley.
I didn't know that. Keeley.
Yeah. They added a classical guitar solo for her in the show.
They actually did?
They did.
I didn't know if Charo was still around.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. She was on the Wendy Williams show a couple weeks ago doing her thing.
I don't even know what the Wendy Williams show is. I'm really obviously out of the times here.
It's a throwback to all those couples that were, you know, doing the big shows. So the way they describe them is it's Steve and Edie with the antagonism of Sonny and Cher with a little dash of Cara Lawrence and Robert Goulet. That's how they describe Pete and Keeley.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember my impressions of all those people. Sonny and Cher... Steve, okay. Well, yeah, there's some sweetness going on, but also a little bite.
There absolutely is.
And part of the premise is that you guys like broke up a long time ago and yet somehow found your way back together.
This is actually, it's set in 68, so it is a transporting experience. Like, I think people who come will really be transported to that time. But the story is that they had broken up, they divorced, their show was canceled, and they went on to do solo careers, which sort of worked out in a way that they were back for a reunion show together. So it's sort of they're bringing back all their old relationships and all their old issues back to this reunion show, which is supposedly live on TV.
All their baggage.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's a crowded stage with a bunch of baggage. So.
Is it just the two characters in the show?
It is, yeah, and the band is on stage. Yeah, so our music director, he plays Del DaCosta, their pianist, but it's just the two people in the show.
And we've got Michael's going to be the...
There's some voiceovers and some, you know, stage crew that is, you know, there at the movie studio or the TV studio.
Oh, because if you're going to do a live show, of course, you're going to see all the...
Yeah.
All the action.
Yeah. Have you guys done this show elsewhere?
Oh, no.
Is this your first crack at it?
No, yeah. This is the first time I'd heard of it was when I got offered the role. So, a lot of people, except for New Yorkers... I mean, it's had a lot of the cult following happened in New York, and then it just went away from New York. But then it had a lot of success in regional theaters, and a lot of regional theaters have been doing it. So people who have done it know it and have seen it in these regional places around the country. But I hadn't heard of it. But it's been a joy getting to know the music and putting it together. It's a lot of fun, and this all right. guy's all right.
Yeah, and she's okay too. I would say though, it's not. No audience member would be limited by their exposure to Sonny and Cher or Steve and Edie. If you know that culture or if you remember that time, I feel like it'll speak to you in that way. But if you don't, it's a show full of great music, and all you ever had to have had is a tumultuous relationship with anybody to understand the relationship between these right. two people, and the way it plays in both seriously, dramatically, and comedically, I think it's a really nice marriage of all those things.
Well, just looking at you guys, you know, I can't really tell how old you might be, so I don't.
That's
I was
nice.
Curious to know. Yeah, I was curious to know, you know, how much of this culture you're familiar with. You know, you said Tessa, you know, was. Interesting. It's been fun getting to know these songs.
Yeah, yeah.
There were only
a couple of songs that I did know.
Black Coffee and Fever,
and some of the stuff we have a cross country tour medley that has I think like 40 songs in it. Snippets of 40 songs. I knew quite a bit of those
songs.
Not
to give away everything, but...
well, am I giving away things?
It's absurd.
Well,
that would be absurd.
That would be a lot of songs to give away, and we don't have time, so that's okay. That's the one that's called here, a cross-country tour. We'll skip that one.
Yes.
We'll skip that tour, but that sounds like a lot of fun. So did you have to go back and view some of these shows?
We have.
You know, Sonny and Cher and so on?
I started pulling up a lot of Steve and Edie clips because the style of performing, that kind of supreme confidence that they had.
Smiling through everything.
Yeah. And the audience loves them so much. And all they do is just one little, you know, wink and the audience is right there in the palm of their hand. And it's a different kind of performance energy, I think, you know, that film or that TV charm that happened.
You know, they were the kind of singers, I was actually thinking of Andy Williams, too. I remember used to watch him on TV because I am old enough. And I always wanted to know, how did they make it work so that their eyes literally sparkled? You know, people's eyes don't sparkle on TV anymore.
Yeah.
Have you worked on that?
Oh, I have been perfecting my sparkling eye technique. I think we have a couple of moments where they do sparkle.
I think so, too.
Mine don't sparkle. They just, they're just eyes.
Our costumes sparkle.
Oh, they sure do. It's worth coming to see just for the costumes.
Yeah, they're amazing.
Kathy Parrott is our handles our wardrobe, and she's wonderful. And the show looks really beautiful.
Yeah,
it's really stunning.
And there must be a lot of costume changes.
There are, and they are fast.
It's the magic of theater.
And I suppose people get to see those changes somewhat or not.
Someone a couple times.
Yeah, a couple times. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a couple that happen right on the deck.
Yeah, during the commercial break.
Yeah, so called.
Well, let's have another song from the show. I think we are going to do Lover.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is this a duet?
It is
indeed.
Or mostly duets, or a lot of solos and duets.
There's just
I guess.
A couple of solos, mostly duets.
Duets. Yeah.
Well, if you're going to have just two people, you know,
you're
sort of limited.
Put them to work, right?
Yeah. Well, this is from the musical Pete and Keeley, which is opening on Friday at the Little Theater in the Square in Sullivan. And it doesn't go for very long. Often their shows will go longer. This one goes just through Sunday, November the 7th. And the box office number is area 217-728-7375. We'll repeat that later on. Chris Crouch and Tessa White are Pete and Keeley. And you're listening to the one and only recording, probably, of the show on Live and Local.
Keeley, what do you say we turn up the heat a little? And make some of those old musical sparks fly again. How about a Pete and Keeley classic?
Ready?
Fire away.
Lover, I surrender to my heart.
Lover.
Lover!
I surrender.
That's a dynamic song. I'm just trying to imagine you guys on stage because I won't tell you what they were doing across the way from me here in the studio while that was going on. But that's from Pete and Keeley, the musical, which is at the Little Theater in the Square in Sullivan. Chris Crouch and Tessa White are Pete and Keeley, and Traylon Dohler, the director of the show, is with us on Live and Local as well. Where are you guys from? I mean, because you're not from Sullivan, I'm guessing.
No. We're all New Yorkers.
Yeah. Well, I was born in Texas, so I moved to New York about 13 years ago.
He's very proud of Texas.
I am very proud of having come from there.
I know, I don't ever say that. I was raised in the South as well, in Georgia and Tennessee, but I'm a New Yorker.
Hmm.
Because that gives you more clout in the theater world to say so, right?
Yeah, and I just feel like I was always meant to be there. I knew when I was a little girl that I was going to end up in New York.
What are some of the shows y'all have been in that we would know?
Tessa was actually here this summer. She was in 25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee at the theater. She played Rona Peretti in that.
Yes, I did, yeah.
We have known each other for close to 10 years.
Yeah.
We met doing summer theater in Big Fork, Montana.
That's right.
No, I just
is that what you call summer stock?
Yeah, good old summer stock.
Good old summer stock.
But what's your career? What's happening with your New York career?
I do a cabaret show with my twin sister called White Girls, a cabaret.
Now, wait a second. Is that coming to the Station Theater? The Little Theater.
It was Banner. Last week we did a cabaret performance of
we
it.
We did, yeah.
I thought I saw
it. Great.
Yeah.
Really wonderful.
Thank you. It's nice of you to say.
Yeah, well.
And Chris, your activities?
This is my first time out here. I've never
In New York.
Been into Sullivan before.
Yeah, but we have gone on in New York.
I've worked, I've been doing theater for about 11, I actually graduated with a degree in journalism and then moved to New York for no reason except just to go live there. And about a year after I got there, I went on my first audition and I've been doing theater ever since. But I've been, like, my favorite shows were, like, The Music Man. I did the national tour of The Music Man playing Harold Hill, and which so does Pete in the show Pete and Keeler. Yep. There's a joke about him playing Harold Hill. And Younger Brother on the national tour of Ragtime and things. I've also done about 80 productions of Forever Plaid, which is a wonderful four-part harmony 50s music show. So.
Yeah, that's been around here at various
absolutely.
Theaters, it's and I have yet to see it either.
Yeah, it's a really great, so charming show.
It's really fun.
So these are all traveling shows you're describing for
it's
the most
true.
Part.
True, I live with my life out of a suitcase.
I mean, it's so you're from New York, but you live in New York and travel elsewhere.
Business, you have to move there to work, but you move there to leave there. Like, you move there to get the job that always takes you away. So I live with subletters in my apartment all the time.
Yeah, that is kind of the irony of it, because it seems to me that is that true, Traylon, for a lot of the actors that come through the little theater, is there folks who tour around the country, you know, the auditions, get gigs elsewhere?
Absolutely, yeah. Especially now, we're bringing, because I, living in New York, I have so many friends and actors and connections there, so a lot of the people we're bringing in are people that live in New York but work all around the country.
And did you bring these guys because you knew them or because they auditioned and...
Nope,
they were the best.
This was just a phone call. I called them knowing how great they were, knowing that they were right for the roles, which is it's one of my favorite parts about this job, is getting to know people that are terrific and picking shows that they will be terrific in and bringing them out to the audiences here.
How common is it either for Broadway shows or for touring shows for exactly that kind of thing to happen, you know, rather than auditioning? Because, of course, you always hear about people who, you know, they go to New York, I'm going to audition, and, you know, most of the time they don't get anything. And is that partly because people like you are just inviting people you know? I don't know how that works.
It's hard. I mean, people audition all the time and get jobs from auditions all the time. But it does seem that you hear a lot about, how did you get this job? Well, I knew someone who recommended me, or, you know, Traylon's been hiring me for years.
Well, you must have been doing okay.
Yeah, thank you. That's nice of you to say.
Well, because I'm guessing that if he'd hired you once and you were really bad, that would have been it.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
Friendship only goes so far.
That's right. It's true.
It's true.
The talent also has to be there. Yeah.
Well, because your success, Traylon, depends on how good they are.
Absolutely.
You know, if you go to the little, if you come to the little theater as artistic director and hire a bunch of bad actors, well, you're not going to keep that job very long.
Absolutely. Yes.
I assume.
It is. Yes. No, I got to bring the best of the best. And thankfully, a lot of friends have been, you know, willing to come out and be a part of this first season here, first year that I'm here, which has been great to bring that really excellent quality, and to be surrounded by people that I know I like and trust.
Well, and the people who work at the theater locally are wonderful, like really warm, really charming people.
Yeah.
All the backstage crew are dressers. God bless them. Mm-hmm. They're working really hard back there right now. So.
Yeah, they are.
What would you say what would you say is the most fun about doing this show, Chris and Tessa?
I don't know. We've just been having such a ball getting to know each other and playing together and singing together, and that's one of the best things about doing shows, is that you create an instantaneous family. Like, you get much closer to a person than you would
right.
normally getting to know someone. Like, I feel like we're family now. And
But like family, it's not always a good relationship. So we were lucky to this family turned out to be really, really loving and wonderful. Yeah. So, but I would say that my favorite part of doing the show so far has been singing with Tessa, like just getting to sing with her. She's a wonderful singer, and she's a very generous actor. So it's been a lot of fun, like putting the show together with her.
What do you mean by that? I've heard that term, that expression before. What is a generous actor? Does she give you a lot of money?
No, that'd be great. No, I mean it in the sense that. Especially when it's just a two-person show, because half of the burden of carrying the story of the play rests on her and half's on me. And if you're not aware of what the other person's doing, then there's no journey to be made. If you can communicate honestly on stage, you can sort of create this genuine experience that the audience is going to pick up on. It is the difference between It's the difference between a great production and a good production is the step it could take. And so when there's no chemistry, when there's no honesty, when you're not listening to each other, I feel like the quality is compromised in a way that it cannot be redeemed with the best voices or the biggest orchestra or the most lavish set. It can't overcome a lack of chemistry. So,
well, we've all seen shows on stage and certainly at movie theaters where you've got a couple of stars cast and they don't work together at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so the show gets panned and exactly. Nobody goes to see it. And
no matter how much money they spent on it, no matter how, it's absolutely, I think that's the case. And so I feel really lucky to get to work with her. So
can I just ditto on all that? Honestly, he's
copy paste.
Yeah, I feel so honored to be singing with Chris too. He's just a beautiful singer and same thing. Awesome. We've been having so much fun. Just like we giggle at each other on stage because we're like.
Even when we shouldn't.
When we shouldn't, in the middle of songs.
Well, you'll have reined all that in by Friday.
Yes, we will. We will. We will, for sure.
When you will just be Pete and Keeley. Chris Crouch and Tessa White are Pete and Keeley. Pete Bartel and Keeley Stevens, to be specific. America's Swingin' Sweethearts, I like that expression. It opens on Friday at 8 o'clock, continues Saturday at 2 and 8, Sunday at 2, and then for the following weekend as well. It wraps up November the 7th at the Little Theater on the Square in Sullivan. For more information, go to thelittletheater.org or phone the box office, area 217-728-7375. Also with us on the show has been Artistic Director and Stage Director for this production, Traylon Doler. Thank you all very much for coming in.
Thank you so much.
And here is more from Pete and Keeley.
I can only give you love that lasts forever.
Forever.
And a promise to be near each time you call.
I promise.
And the only heart I own for you and you alone. That's all.
That's all.
That's all.
That's all. Well, I can only give you country walks in springtime.
I love walks
and a hand to hold.